walking around. Yes, I can see the two of them. Who would like to open the batting? We have a question there, please.
Thank you. Richard Shenton for Reliable Data Systems. Thank you for the presentation of all the areas to be covered by Future. I wonder if you just say a few more words about what Future actually, what you actually see Future as being. Is it a discussion forum? Is it an umbrella term for a collection of R&D projects? Or is it a delivery program? I'm not quite clear on what lies under the name, if you see what I mean.
Okay, thanks for that. That's a pretty central question that the project team has wrestled with for some time. I think, Ed, if I could ask you to start.
Thank you, Jeff. It's certainly a delivery program. It's aiming to put some of these concepts through proof and validation in a relatively short period of time. So any new ideas and new technologies, we'd like to actually trial those within possibly 2 years so that there can some further development take place. And as with any research project, there's bound to be some things that happen that were unexpected and some that are as predicted. So yes, we're certainly looking at a delivery program of which the first step is proof of concept.
Steve? Okay, just to expand on that, I see Future as an umbrella description of a number of things. So we've tried to explain what the vision is of where we're trying to get to with a more connected through real-time information railway system, controlling trains to optimise capacity or fuel efficiency, whatever we need. And like with anything that's big, because this is big, you need to slice it up and do it in a series of steps, and that's exactly what Clive aimed to demonstrate as to what the steps may be to demonstrate the capability and getting us to a path of reaching that vision. So that's my view of it is.
I think the other thing that would be quite useful to say is how does it fit within the industry structure? We did say a little bit about that, but what we actually have is Ed's team are hopefully helped by a program control board that has representatives from not only right across the rail industry, but also people from outside the rail industry, people from technology strategy board, other areas of expertise, academia, to try to make sure that the activities of Futro take a broad view and not just focus on current thinking within the industry. And then, of course, as Steve said, that we've got the technical strategy leadership group, and so Futro actually reports into the technical strategy leadership group. So there is a structure there already where there is cross-industry representation, and we have the opportunity for manufacturers, various suppliers and such like to engage in that through the representatives on the Programme Control Board itself and also on the System Interface Committee, the Train Control Communication System Interface Committee, and on TSLG itself. So there are a number of opportunities there to engage.
Yeah, thanks for that question. I think that's a really good question to begin with, because that's it sort of sets the sort of boundary of what we're talking about. So, further question, please.
Steve Dennis from Parsons. There's been quite a lot of talk about the delivering what the end customer wants. And I suppose there's quite a lot of debate about who is the end customer, but the commodities that are transported are either people or animals perhaps, or things, and I suppose the end customers are the passengers, the passenger groups, the distributors of commodities, if you like. Could you perhaps just clarify, expand, or whatever on, I think the TSLG is the governing group of Futro. How are those groups represented and their needs captured? through that group or either through other means. Perhaps you could give us something on that.
Okay, so I think you're right. I think TSLG has a governance role. So I explained some of what TSLG is responsible for, which is to set vision. We've done that, but we need to keep it fresh. We also need to oversee the implementation of that vision. So, as I said in my presentation, at the launch of the RTS, we called for the industry to step forward and make it reality. So this is part of that process. How do we get input from passenger groups? The simple answer is by engaging with them. But within the governance structure, Clive explained there are system interface committees. Futro sits very, very neatly within Clive's system interface committee. We have opportunities to engage with other cross-industry groups, and to within that get the passenger perspective and the freight perspective. We have freight represented on TSLG. So I think there's a number of mechanisms to get input. But where you started from on your question, this is about delivering value for end customers and whether they be passengers or freight and logistics companies. That's absolutely what we're trying to assist and aid and generate value for.
Nothing, Clive.
Yes, thanks, Jay. I was going to say, what's quite interesting, I tried to explain at the very beginning of my session, is that actually in terms of the end customer, i.e. the fare-paying customer or the freight customer that's shipping freight loads, their requirement is very simple. There's obviously a hygiene test on the fact that the trains are clean and reliable and various other things which they expect as a given. But actually, they want a multimodal solution. They want a simple solution that tells them when they can expect to arrive at their destination. And they want, the only things that are very clear, is they want a range of fares such that that will give them the opportunity to decide, do I want to pay the absolute premium fare to get me the shortest journey time? Or do I am I a backpacker that's not really bothered about when I get to my destination, I just want to find the cheapest way? And there's a whole range of requirements between the two. But there's not a whole lot of interest in widgets. And I'm not surprised at all. We think about other services that we use, and we're not really interested in how they achieve it. We're interested in the end result. So it's a fairly simple request that we're getting clearly in. So given that hygiene test, that all the things that we're meant to do, we provide the services that we say we will, and they don't want to be involved in, I've just arrived at King's Cross 10 minutes late because my connecting train from somewhere else was late, and I'm now being told my ticket's not valid on this service, and I've got to buy a new ticket. Those sort of things absolutely are detested by our customers, and equally, very often, where we've not looked at multimodal solutions, and so we do quite daft things sometimes with people because we're not linked up between the various modes. And by the modes, I don't only mean bus and coach and rail and aviation, but also taxis as well. We need to come up with an integrated solution so the premium customer or late night customer may well have a solution that part of their journey involves a taxi, but it needs to be planned. That's the request that we're getting back.
Yeah, just to build on those answers, within the Programme Control Board there is representation from Passenger Focus, which is the primary passengers representative group, so we have direct input from those who are right in the sharp end of being the passenger and the customer to us. We don't have freight customers represented directly, but through the operating companies, the freight operating companies, who are very close to their freight forwarders and the like. So we do have input directly into the programme from that, and we're hoping that those bodies will form parts of whatever collaborations or partnerships might evolve out of today to inform what this might look like for the future.
This theme of personalising the service, which Clive indicated, is a really powerful tool. So again, if we have the information around us to provide that and push it out to individual passengers, that is really valuable. And it can connect with other revenue-generating opportunities. So If we have a student who may be very cost conscious in terms of the journey, then on a real time basis, based on what's happening, it may be that individual is transferred from one mode of transport to another. There may be a register of that individual's preference in terms of coffee. So if they're at Finsbury Park Station and there's a Costa Coffee there, then Costa Coffee have the opportunity of pinging a message to that individual to say, oh, by the way, we understand you're at Finsbury Park Station, would you like 50p off your latte today? So revenue opportunities are huge if we use that information in an intelligent way.
I guess so.
That's another group, the app developers.
Yeah.
Which are better around.
Yeah.
Very interested in
that. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I see a question at the back there. Please. And just while we're waiting for the microphone, that's not actually right. It's 11:40, so if you have a question, you need to be asking them.
Thank you. Paul Cheesley, Technical Program Delivery. Just wanted to ask, imagine for a moment we've achieved this all. We've got this thing working, we've got all the clever stuff that Clive's explained. Who's making the decisions? Because perhaps in an ideal world you could optimise everything, but in reality we know that you could optimise timekeeping as against fuel efficiency, as against delays or something like that. There's conflicts, isn't there? Because that's the real world. Remember, just working on ICC development, they're conflicting between two trains. Resolving that is tricky sometimes, and then having to explain it and justify it and all the rest of it. Now when you add on all kinds of other things that you're resolving in the machine, who's actually setting the ultimate priorities here, or is that part of what you're doing? Is it the government, the regulator, the man in the signal box, or the person on the train somehow? I'm just struggling a little bit here as to how it would work, because you get towards the end of the month and you could find your on-time performance is falling a bit, so you boost your sort of speed of running or something, or you get the oil price goes up in the middle of the month and you think, oh, we'll ease back on fuel efficiency, we'll try and improve that. Who's making those kind of decisions in this system, or are they outside the system?
Yes, certainly. That's an extremely good question. And in fact, I think the reality of what I described is that you could imagine under connected DAS, I 10 o'clock from Paddington today could have arrived 15 minutes later in Bristol on green signals, because the greater good of the railway decided that actually it was going to be sacrificed. Under today's rules, clearly I would get a bill for that, because I would have incurred 15 minutes of delay, and under the schedule regimes, which I'm sure some of you are familiar with, we've got a mechanism that means that I would compensate Network Rail for running my train late. But the reality is, my train's run late because the traffic management system has actually decided it's in the greater good. So one of the first things that's happening at the moment, and it's greatly aided by having the rail delivery group, because the whole purpose of the rail delivery group is to try to unstick some of these conundrums where there are someone arriving from Mars would say, well, why haven't you done this? And the answer is because the rail industry structure doesn't enable you to do it. And so we're fortunate to have the rail delivery group, which is actually saying, can we identify the benefits to the industry, and then we effectively need to sit down and work out what the individual players' benefits and compensation needs to be. So one of the things which I've bored people in the past with was regen braking. We had regen braking in 1950. We had a huge amount of rolling stock with regen braking, but it's taken quite a major cross-industry initiative to actually get it switched on, which is incredible. The capability of saving energy, saving carbon emissions and so on wasn't grasped because the benefits sat in different parts of the industry to the people that actually had to make relatively small investments. So that's great, and we've moved forward on that, and that I think has helped. That's one very good example of how the rail delivery group's role has been emphasised as trying to unstick what ought to be paying the obvious benefits to the overall industry. Now, your specific question, very valid question, one of the reasons why we're so keen to get the connected DAS pilot underway is because the clever bit of that will be developing the algorithms. It's not the hardware, it's the algorithms. And those algorithms exist in certain forms already for metros, and in fact they can be optimised during the peak period for capacity and in the off-peak period for energy. So that it's actually possible to turn the gain up and down what you require those algorithms to do. So the clever bit of work now is to define those algorithms, and I suspect that will bring some wholly new players into the rail industry, because there are some things, air traffic control, for example, have got some bright ideas about how to do things. There are some clever things going on in the automotive sector, but we need to bring together, how do we create algorithms and that actually enable us to turn up and down the gain on the various things that we've talked about? And then there's going to clearly be a commercial discussion, because I've now driven a coach and horses through the schedules, and there will need to be agreement that says, right, my 10:15 my 10 o'clock arrive in 15 minutes in Bristol, late into Bristol, is in the greater good of the rail industry. So how do we now agree how the compensation mechanisms take that into consideration? And I have to say, it won't end there, because if you imagine my little bit of vision about my end-to-end journey, you can imagine the next step would be to say, actually, the fact that I've missed my 2 o'clock from King's Cross, it's not my problem, I shouldn't be buying a new ticket. The industry needs to have a compensation mechanism that means that whatever costs have been incurred by me getting the 14:30 flow straight away back to the person that actually initiated the problem in the first place. So I think you can see that if we start off with the schedule regime, it's not going to end there. And if we're going to provide this end-to-end journey solution, it's going to need a whole lot more joined up thinking across the industry. And that's where we're looking heavily towards RDG to help us to iron out some of these potential conflicts.
Clive, thanks very much. Can I just squeeze in one more question, because we're running, unless there's a burning addition.
Agree with everything that Clive has said. I think that there does need to be a controlling mind somewhere, but you know, we're at the start of a journey, not the end of it. There are going to be some unanswered questions, and at the moment we might be talking principles rather than being able to answer specifics, which was where your question was directed. So there would need to be a controlling mind. The issues we have within the rail industry in terms of compensation, clubs absolutely right, we need to sort that out. And it may be that you know, we reach an environment where information flow is there on a dynamic basis, and listening to what customers are looking for at that very time. So if there's 1,000 people on a particular train that happens to be delayed, and people are tweeting like mad saying, you know, no, we want the priority because, that controlling mind, although the algorithms ought to be able to accommodate that in the suite of other variables that they're dealing with.
Okay, then thanks.
Very good.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. And then a final question just here, please.
Good morning. My name is Jed Simmons from IBM. To some extent, it's linked to the last question, but more specific, takes it down a level. Steve, during your piece, you mentioned about Futuro was to deliver 200 to 400 million annual benefits. So, you know, can you just talk to where you believe they're coming from? Because my experience so far is that safety trumps everything. But when it comes down to contracting for business with some of the entities in the room, you need a business case. And the revenue generating piece then comes to the fore.
Yeah.
So could you speak to that, please?
Yeah, sure.
We've quoted a number, and there has been some analysis. A business case has been generated and has had some interrogation and challenge. And we still stand by it. We still think it's valid. It's in a range, because again, we're predicting the future, and who's good at that? Where does that, if you think about fundamentals, where does the money come from? We've talked about the opportunity to optimise on capacity. Capacity can be converted into, you know, financial benefit. We've talked about the opportunity for optimising for fuel efficiency, which you may want to do at certain times of the day. And that again generates cost savings. So that's a sort of fundamental review of where the savings opportunities are. You're right, safety is a key consideration. In everything that we're doing, we're not going to compromise safety and still operate with the same safety integrity levels, but we still think and stand by there being a business case behind Futuro, which is a big prize. And that's why we're here launching it. encouraging suppliers and the industry to work with us to move forward and implement it in a series of steps. So, you agree with that?
I certainly. And as Steve says, there's some analysis being done. We don't claim to understand all of those numbers in the detail, but we certainly understand them enough to stand by the headline claim that we're making. And you know, those translate into real benefits for the user at the end of the day, whether it's the freight customer or the passenger on the train, either in carbon reduction capacity to allow them to travel where they want to, or in cost reduction. And cost reduction may not be necessarily the largest of those, possibly capacity is, but we certainly have some ideas that support that claim.
Do you want to?
No, it's fine. I think it's covered very well. Thank you.
Okay, well, thanks for that. And as I said earlier, you know, please continue the conversation on into the programme, and there will be members of the Futro programme team around to discuss. So now over to Roland Harwood of 100% Open, who's going to tell us what he has planned for us.
Okay. Round of applause for our speakers, I think. Thank you. Okay, thanks very much, James, Clive, Ed, that was great. I live near Finsbury Park, and there is a cost of coffee, so I'm looking forward to getting my 50p voucher soon through the Futro system. I took a lot from that. We heard kind of four or five questions there. We'd really like to hear from every single one of you, both in the breakouts, but just from the talks that we've just heard, you've all sort of received a card that looks a bit like this. So if you are compelled to do so, we'd love it if you write down your key takeaways from each session, any points of clarification that perhaps haven't been answered yet, and any questions that you have for our speakers or for the Futro programme. That's really, really helpful intel for us. But perhaps I should explain who we are. So we're from a company called 100% Open. We're an open innovation agency, and I won't bore you with what that is. Needless to say, we work with companies, industries, and cross-industry to make innovation happen and to figure out some of the complexity of the future. And that's essentially what we're doing with you today. We're working with James and the team on grappling with some of those big strategic issues. I love the first question. So this all sounds great, but what actually is Futro? And so we would like your help figuring out what it is, possibly more importantly, what it isn't. So what things should be perhaps excluded from the Futro programme is as helpful to us as what should be included in it. So I'm going to introduce the team in just a second, but so I've mentioned these cards. You'll have been seeing, it's probably difficult to see from the back, but we have a screen, we're live blogging. Steve and Brian, give us a wave, they're at the back. Here we go, turn around, give them a wave. There they are, they're blogging and tweeting. If you do feel compelled to do so, use the hashtag FutroUK, and we're capturing all that, and that's a record of the day, and that will feed into some of this wider stuff that we're doing. And then finally, can I get a show of hands? How many people in the room are engineers, ex-engineers, trained in some kind of technical capacity? Can I get a show of hands? Okay, that's pretty much everybody. So I'm an engineer by background, so nothing wrong with that. But all I will say is, to James's point, and I think this was echoed by Clive and a few others, we need to look perhaps, we don't necessarily have all the answers in this room. I think we have lots of the answers, but not necessarily all of them. So maybe we need to look at adjacent sectors like automotive. Maybe we need to look at completely unrelated sectors to draw some of the technology, some of the solutions, some of the inspiration for what Futro is. And just as a tiny signal towards that, we have Murray. Give us a wave, Murray. Over here, putting him on the spot, creating a rich picture of some of the conversation today. We'll be filling that out over the course of the next hour or two. And urge you to engage with that. And that's really to stimulate a bit of left brain as well as right brain thinking, because I think that is going to be necessary for the success of Futro. So the breakouts, we're going to run a fairly tight ship. One of them will be in here, the other three will be in other rooms. We'll tell you where they are in a minute. Can I invite my three co-facilitators to stand up and just tell us what we're doing and where, starting with David.
Hi everybody, my name is David Simoes-Brown. I'll be running the sessions on meeting customer needs. So without customers, there'll be no one to sell this stuff to. So that includes passengers and freight customers, of course, as well. And the themes we'll be developing are reducing customer stress and increasing their satisfaction.
So that's in the Bronte room, which is over the way there.
Okay, hang on a second. So can I get a show of hands? Who is joining that in round one? Can you remember? Okay, so we've got a handful. If you're not sure yet, then follow David to Bronte. So session two, I'm going to lead that one. I don't need the mic. So that's going to be in here, and that's all about optimizing system performance. So that's about figuring out the criteria of system performance, developing the tools and algorithms, and what are some of the technical and commercial constraints to the IBM question at the end there as well. So that'll be in here. Can I get a show of hands who's going to join that breakout? Okay, wonderful. I ask you all to keep put when the others go. I'll explain why in a moment. Breakout three is Simon.
So I'm Simon Lewis. I'm going to be leading the two breakouts on how to combine human and technological decision making. At least one of our speakers said he thought everything could be automated, but that might not be a good idea. Computers are good at some things, humans are good at others, and we want to work out which is which. So if you're interested in how to combine software with wetware, follow me to Elliot.
Elliot is room. Over that way, sort of. Okay, thank you. A show of hands for who's joining Elliot. Wetware, marvellous. Thank you. Follow Simon. And last but not least, Jake. We are, yes. Yeah. Sorry, two rounds, both half an hour. Yeah.
My name's James McGilvray. I'm going to be dealing with the concept of dealing with data and looking at it through the perspective of management, integrity, standards, and security. I've got three questions lined up to help to guide the discussions and ideas. And I'll be in the Chaucer room, which is literally just behind here. So afterwards, if you want to follow me through, that'll be great.
Fantastic. So just stay put for a second. Yes, we are doing two rounds. So the first round starts now, and your tea and coffee is in the room. So please go straight to your room. A quick fire break. Oh, just hold on 1 second.